jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Welcome to the Round 18 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. Good to be here after a good win from the Bombers and a decent weekend Supercoach.
I think some of our premiums still underperformed, but it wasn't quite as bad as last week. We've got a special guest joining us for the week. He's joined us for our podcast previously, and that's Hawker, a longtime veteran of the Supercoach Coach community. Welcome back on, mate.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And Hawker's actually, since you've last come on the show, started up fantasy or punting websites that has plenty of great advice. So why don't I let you sort of introduce them yourselves, mate, and you can tell our listenership where they can find your additional content.
Yeah, no worries, mate. You can check out either fantasystars.com.au or puntingstars.com.au. Obviously, the names say it all. Fantasy Stars are just fantasy sports news, tools, and information on strategy and advice for Australian fantasy sports, and in particular a focus on daily fantasy sports, which is getting quite popular in Australia. And Punting Stars is a similar setup, but for sports betting, where we've got quite a few contributors now across a range of sports, AFL, horse racing, greyhound racing, golf, basketball, you name it, where they're sort of on there. And I'm also running my own AFL betting model on there, which is doing quite well.
And I understand on Fantasy Stars, Hawker, that you have advice on both Supercoach and Daily Fantasy. So we don't talk that much about Daily Fantasy, Mark. But if any listeners are after some pretty darn good DFS advice, I would suggest fantasystars.com.au be a pretty decent place to go.
I was listening to you guys talk in the pre-show, Marcus and Hawker, and realized that I'm not the biggest Supercoach nerd out there. You guys are totally nerdier than I am.
Yeah. Well, Hawker's talking about Zach Tui's score correlations with Andrew Mackey, down to sort of a couple of blokes and how they might stack up when they're playing in a game together. Hawker's got all that sort of in-depth analysis tucked away in his brain. So, I could not recommend those two websites enough. And he's been a very great sort of long-time contributor and member of the Supercoach Coach community.
How'd you go on the weekend, mate?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Mark. I think you probably beat me on the weekend, but still a score above 2,300 is what I'll take. 2,343, it moved me up a little bit into 1,065. There were a couple of annoyances in my team. Tom Lynch being an emergency was great because he only scored 58, but Elliot Yeo being a late out brought Lynch on field, which was extremely frustrating. Max Gawn, who I traded in last week for Parsons, who outscored Gawn last week, only scored 57 this week, which is really painful. Alex Witherden and Hugh Greenwood on the midfield bench. And I had Tom Rockliffe on field, only scoring the 57. Yeah. So bloody frustrating from him. Considering I had a few underperformers here or there, I'm happy to still have moved up in the rank. So yeah, not too bad. Mark, how about yourself?
I think I was tracking 1 point ahead of you on the weekend. And then when Yeo was out, you got Lynch's score and I got Witherden's score.
Yeah.
So that made a 50-point win for me this week, which was not a kick in the guts at all. It felt like the opposite of that. And I am now 48 points behind you, ranked 1291. I had some similar frustrations. Rockliffe completely sucking. Also, Gawn. I think Gawn was on like 20 going into the last quarter. Like, it could have even been worse than that. I had a huge decision last week that I felt like I really needed to bring in Rory Laird, and I was going to get rid of Tui or Heath Shaw. And I ended up getting rid of Shaw because I figured that he's got higher ownership and I kind of needed to gamble against the pack. And hopefully Tui came home really strong. When Shaw was on 3 at quarter time, I thought, I'm bloody genius. I've just walked into it here. But then Shaw looked absolutely fantastic for the next 3 quarters. So that one does worry me a little bit, but pretty happy to have Laird in my team. And I'm sure
that was Heath Shaw's second highest score in my team since joining my side. So thank you very much.
And the thing was, he actually looked really good, and he probably did the week before as well, so that's a bit concerning. And Tui was on 54 at halftime and then just dropped off a little bit. Now, the topic of the week, Marcus, is going to be, I guess it's going to be Pendlebury. I don't have Pendlebury, and I'm pretty sure that I gave you some advice a couple of weeks ago that you should not be bringing this guy into your team. I did not mince my words. Yeah. I was very, very clear on that.
Yeah. Well, he's cost me 40K and a chunk of points so far, but bloke straight out of my team at 500K this week. But before we get into that, let's hear about how Hawker has been going so far this season. So, Hawker, I understand that you have a Fantasy Stars team that's been created and sort of tracked and shared on Fantasy Stars. Do you want to let us know sort of how that team's going?
Yeah, sure, mate. Yeah, we do a bit of a review each round. And this round, we scored 2,441. Didn't actually make any trades. Most of it obviously went pretty good. The only poor spots this week was Goldie 62. And look, Robbie Gray was a little bit down, but other than that, it was all pretty smooth sailing. Didn't cop any Elliot Yo laid outs or anything like that.
Before we get on to the show, let's go through a quick group update. So as I mentioned last week, we're going to give out a stubby holder to the leader of the round for the last six rounds of the Supercoach season. This week, that Supercoach coach stubby holder is going to Daryl's Velvet Mango Fly, who scored 25-34 the weekend, which is a massive score. That pushed Daryl up into 600th overall, which is a great result. So Daryl, if you can shoot me an email to admin@supercoachcoach.com.au or get in contact with us via any of our social media pipes, I will get that Supercoach Coach stubby holder sent out to you. So congrats to Daryl. In terms of our league update, we are still holding 16 of the top 20 leagues, and I think second, third, and fourth are now ours as well, whereas last week, Zermichael's league moved up into second, so that's good news for us. And
we're also first.
Yeah, and we're also first. So with seven rounds to go, we're still looking all right, getting a little bit more excited. So let's get on into the show. The first question here is from Bryce Mitchell. Is it time to upgrade Nick Newman? And if yes, who are the top defensive options to upgrade to? Hawker, do you still have Newman in your team?
I don't, mate. No, I got rid of him a while back. One of those unfortunate ones early in the year when he missed that game or two and ended up missing his big cross rises.
Feel that one, mate.
I had Nick Newman until sort of a couple of rounds ago when I traded him to Scott Pendlebury. I think you can argue that that was a poor trade in hindsight. But he scored 64 on the weekend, and that's his worst score in about 10 rounds. And so that's prompted some people to consider trading him out with a break even of 114. His price has gone all the way up to 431,000. So even if you didn't have a lot of cash in the back line, you could still get decent options. Mark, there be anyone top of mind when you're looking at a premium in the back line?
Yeah, look, I think there is. There's a couple of the cheapies that were a lot more expensive a little while ago. And they are Zach Williams, who was out for a few weeks with a hamstring injury, but's had some big games this year, averaging 92 for the season. And probably the biggest one is Robertson, who actually looked really good against the Bombers in a big loss. He's only 442,000. And in the first half of the season, he was maybe looking close to a must-have. Averaged 98 for the season. Still been averaging 80, 88 over the 3 and 5 round period. So, look, I think that he has the upside there that if you don't have a lot of cash, he's a pretty good player to bring in. And the form backman at the moment is seems to be Michael Hurley, who's averaging 115, 116 over that 3 to 5 game period. I think he had over 30 touches 3 games in a row, and he's just killing it at the moment.
Hawker, is there anybody you're looking at in particular in the back line? Are you all done with upgrades for the year? Are you just in maintenance mode at the moment? Or what are you looking at?
All six of mine scored 95-plus last week, so there's none there that we're sort of looking at. But look, for anybody that doesn't have some of the popular guys, Lard's down to 489, Adams is 460 now, and Heathshaw 431. I know a lot of people, I think Mark traded out Shaw last week, but I'd actually be looking in as a trade target if you're looking for a Newman swap. So, yeah, I think those three, which were all popular at the start of the year, are now come down to prices, which you pretty much just about have to have those three, I think, at those prices.
Yeah.
Yeah, except for Heathshaw, obviously, who should be traded out.
No. Yeah, I don't know if you're trading him out, but look, his floor, I think, is average 90 for the rest of the year, and he's still got a lot of upside left in him. So 430, absolute bargain, in my opinion. So.
Yeah, and if you don't tell him, Hawker.
If you don't have Adams or Laird, I think you're right. Like, those two are the two guys that are under 500,000, that have the highest ceilings, both averaging over 100 for the year. They're the two, if you haven't got, you'd want to be bringing in.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about Lee Montagna? We talk about his injury history being a concern, but, you know, with only 7 rounds left, surely his upside becomes a little bit more tempting and his injury risk becomes a little bit less risky.
Yeah, he seems probably like a 90 average this year, which is close to what he is averaging. And so that may be a slight upgrade on Newman, but it's not a big upgrade.
Let's move off the back line now and into the midfield. Dom Dunn, or at Dombowski80 on Twitter, has one spot left to upgrade, but isn't sure whether to trade out Hugh Greenwood or Alex Witherden. Who do you guys reckon you'd cut first? Witherden is priced at 260K, whereas Greenwood is obviously priced a fair bit more at 375. So you'd be letting go of Witherden a little bit earlier. His break-even's negative 25. So that has me saying probably more likely trade out Greenwood at this stage. Would you resonate with that, Hawker, or would you differ from that?
Yeah, similar thoughts. I'd probably more make it just on what swingman I need. So like, if you're going to need some Witherden cover in the backs later on, you'd keep him. But if you need Greenwood to sort of help cover up forward as well, you'd have to take that into account.
So you think the points that they score is almost sort of less relevant. You're more looking toward which position you're more likely to need cover from. So more from a risk mitigation point of view.
Totally agree, yep.
Mark, would you agree with that?
I would, but then I think that it's a lot harder to upgrade Witherden. And this is not the week to be trading him out, coming off a 109 with a negative 20-odd break even and only 260,000. He's still got a lot more money to make.
Yeah.
To be honest, I would trade either out this week. I think you should be waiting if you can.
Yeah, I agree with that.
All right, we'll move on to this next question here from at BrendanCM6 on Twitter. His midfield is full, but Joel Selwood seems a bit too cheap to ignore. Rather than sidewaysing a midfielder like Hanbury, what are your thoughts on running a 9-man midfield?
I think if you can get Selwood as a 9th midfielder, he's probably not going to be playing that 9th midfielder role. It'd probably be someone else in your team. And you can loophole pretty well and probably make a crap load of points doing that on the run home.
Hawker, would you consider a 9th midfielder, or would you side swap instead? Or would pass on Joel?
No, I wouldn't pass on him. If you can bring him in and it's not going to make you short on trade. So if you're less than 4, I probably wouldn't bother. But if you've got 5 or 6, like a lot of teams, I think he's good as a 9th midfielder. There's been so many players missing and even the laid outs lately that whoever your 9th mid is going to be playing a lot of the time anyway.
Even sort of double trading a couple of rookies to bring Selwood in at that price seems pretty decent. If you're faced with an injury in your midfield on the run home, you basically get to side swap them to correct another position on ground if necessary, or you might not even have to trade out that 9th midfielder if it's a short-term injury. So you buy that cover, or you mitigate your risk in that way as well. So I think I agree with both of you in the sense that if you have more than 4 trades, at 450K, Joel Selwood's a bit too hard to pass up. So whether it be trying to manufacture him on field as an extra midfielder, or even sort of side-swapping a midfielder in order to bring him in, I think Joel Selwood should be coming into most teams this week. He scored 120 last week and 94 this week, yep. And Geelong are still sitting in the top 4 at the moment.
He has been copping a pretty heavy tag in a lot of games this year, and he did it again on the weekend. And I think with Dangerfield a bit injured and maybe in some doubt this week, that attention is going to continue to go to Selwood, just because it's almost impossible to tag Danger in the form that he's been in for the last sort of couple of months. So that is a bit of a concern, because he has been susceptible to the tag in the past, but at 450K, very, very difficult to resist. And if it wasn't for that injury game, I've been very happy to have him in my team this year.
All right, let's move to Steve Soden's question, and this is the main topic for the week. Is Pendles a trade? The current forecast seems to be about a month, and considering we have sort of 7 to 8 games left, that looks about sort of 50% of the time, potentially a little bit more. Steve has 7 trades left, which is pretty similar to what you and I have, Mark. Pendles.
But I don't have Pendles.
Yeah. If you have Pendles and that many trades, I think it's almost a no-brainer that you should trade him out. Hawker, would you agree with that?
Yeah, for sure. Definite no-brainer. There's too many value options around not to.
Are you facing Pendles this week?
No.
No, you're not as well. Wow. Damn, I'm the only sucker out of the 3 of us with Pendles on my team. And he's only
and the
been
best part,
team.
The best part is definitely the fact that you only brought him in 2 weeks ago.
God, it does. There's a big kick in the guts. At least this was a short-term injury, Mark. It wasn't one of those lingering ones that I could have gone, well, I should have known he was injured anyway. You know, he was still a... even poorer luck that he got injured post-trading.
I think we're going to talk about some of the options to bring in for Pendles, and there's a couple of different price points with that. I think the question is, if you have 7 trades left, is not whether you trade him, it's whether you actually double trade to bring in one of the more expensive guys, or you just single trade and take a value option.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. I think The other question, and this one comes from Al Lewis, is what do you do if you don't have many trades left, like Al does? So what's sort of the threshold where you might consider keeping Scott Pendlebury? For me, it's probably three trades. Even if I had four, I would probably still consider trading Pendlebury. I mean, it's a lot of money. It's a midfield spot, so it's a spot that should be scoring 110. So the price, sort of the scoring that you're giving up is quite significant there. Yeah, Hawker, what trade number would you be looking at as a threshold where you consider just holding on to Pendlebury?
Those last few trades are important to cover donuts or injury situations. And look, this is the perfect one of those injury situations where he might be out for a few. So I'd say if I had four, I'd probably trade three. I don't think I would.
That seems about right. I think a little bit depends on what your bench looks like, because I've got Witherden on my mid-bench, but then Cousins and Hibbard behind him, and both of those guys have had season-ending shoulder injuries. So that makes me a lot more vulnerable, like, to be keeping a premium, because I wouldn't have any midfield bench cover. So from that perspective, I would probably be more willing to trade a Pendles than, because I just don't think I can carry an injury at this point of the year.
So there's a lot to really take in, I guess. How many trades do you have left? Do you have potentially a bench premium already? How significant is your bench in terms of rookies that might not be playing or might be at risk of dropping out of the team as we move closer toward the final series? At the end of the day, though, 3 to 4 does sound like sort of the threshold that you'd be a little bit more on the fence about. But as Marcus sort of highlighted, will also come down to some other factors that will be specific to your team. Moving back to side swapping Pendle, so not looking to upgrade Pendlebury, but somebody around his price point at 500k. Hawker, who did you think were sort of the best options under sort of 530k?
Selwood's an obvious no-brainer, yep. So he'd be one choice. Look, for anyone that doesn't have Taylor Adams, I think that link's still handy, and at 461 is a very good buy. Third, I'd have Nat Fyfe, then probably Ollie Wines and Brad Ebert.
I think it might be an opportunity to take someone a bit unique. There's a bunch of players that have similar potential upsides over an 8-week stretch that are available around that sort of price. So if you are looking to get someone a bit different against the rest of the competition, which can obviously backfire, or different in your league to try and get you a win, Lockie Whitfield and Clayton Oliver, two of the young guns, not bad picks, both been in good form and definitely have the potential to average sort of 110 over that period. Wines, Cochin, and Ebert, all under 500,000. So you don't need any cash in the bank to pick up those guys. And as Hawker suggested, I think that Wines and Ebert at around that price probably have the highest upside out of anyone.
There is Hanbury too, guys, which is probably worth just chucking out there. He hasn't been in great form, but at 464, yeah, it's probably got to be considered as well.
Yeah. When I look at some of the price tags, I mean, it is fairly crazy how underperformant some of these players have been. Yeah, I mean, Rory Sloane, Tom Rockliffe, these are a couple of players that we're going to talk about in relation to whether or not to actually trade them out. But, yeah, they're so cheap. Even Trent Cotchin, Mark, he was averaging 115 at the start of the season, if I don't know if you remember that. But you'll be glad that you didn't actually start him, because his average has dropped right off to 103, and he's only at,
always does.
Yeah, priced at 476 now. You already mentioned Dan Hanbury, Hawker at 464. Even Jack Stephen, we've seen him average 110 before. He's currently averaging 460, and the Saints are contending for the top eight, so that's surprising. Dyson Heppel, a similar scenario. We've seen him average 110 before. He's currently only averaging 98, priced at 450. There's plenty of blokes that if you wanted to take a sort of 6-7 week punt on, legitimately have shown the history to be able to do that quite comfortably for at least that patch.
Even Matt Prittis is 429. Like, we're talking about 10 guys under 500,000 that could average 110 on the way home.
Give me the choice to pick between them all. Like, I don't really know how to pick through them. Like, in the past, I would have looked to potentially the run home, because with only 6 to 7 games left, like, that's fairly indicative. But the season's so close this year, it almost seems misleading to try and do that.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can necessarily pick that the Saints are definitely going to make it into the eight over Essendon, and therefore Jack Stephen looks better than Heppel. If I assume one's going to win themselves into the eight and the other's going to lose their way out. Like, it's very tough.
So under 500,000, which is, look, some people are not going to have any money. Under 500,000, I think we all agree that Selwood is the pick of the bunch if you don't have him.
Yeah.
Who would you take next? Give us two players that you would take after Selwood.
Can I pass first and pass the Hawker? Hawker, do you know who you pick?
I mentioned mine before, mate. Adams and Fife, but I'm guessing those two might even be in a lot of sides. So yeah. If you're going a little unique, I'll say Winesy. But
Mark, what do you reckon if you had to pick sort of the top three under 500? Who would they be for you?
Sure. So I must confess that I have already spoken to Hawker about this today, so we may have similar opinions. Just Hawker, like, is probably my go-to guy on, you know, I've got a difficult decision over the years. I've probably spoken to him more than anyone about Supercoach. And I sort of had already come to the conclusion that I think Wines, Cochin, and Ebert are the three that stand out for me. So I think that they're the three that could average, the most likely to get to a 110 average of that time, around that period. I would like to pick Brad Crouch. I'm not sure whether I have the guts to do that, though. That's a pretty out there sort of pick. I should also mention that, just saying that I think Arthur Hawk is right. Adams is a really good pick. And if you traded out five or don't have him at 510, I would be locking him in based on the last 2 weeks.
If I had to pick a 1-2-3, Joel Selwood, number one. I think Ollie Wines, I'd actually go with number two. Number three, I think I would go with Dan Hannabury, even though he hasn't inspired a huge amount of confidence. Sydney need to perform to make it into the top eight on the run home. And if they are to make it, I think some of their midfielders will score all right.
Yeah, it seems like it could definitely have the upside there. And that's why this is such a difficult decision, because there is so many players with upside, but they could also burn you quite badly.
So what if you had the cash to sort of trade upwards? If we're looking at sort of maximizing scoring potential, we've got a question here from Bryce Mitchell. If you don't own Dusty, is Pendles to Dusty an absolute no-brainer?
He's someone that has never been in a position to come into my team just because of timing, but I definitely wish I had him. And if money was not an option, he is the guy that I would be looking at.
Hawker, how about yourself, mate?
Yeah, I don't mind him. He's got that contract hanging over his head. And look, if danger falls over, he could have a Brownlow too. So he's got a lot to play for over the back end of the year. So look, I don't mind it. There's a couple other guys I'll be looking at. But yeah, definitely don't mind Dusty as a pick.
Who would the other couple of guys be if you're looking at, you know, top scoring potential and obviously omitting, you know, Dangerfield?
Yeah, probably Tom Mitchell at about 600K. Look, I can't see him going much under 120 from here. And look, Lockie Neal's actually come down in price. Well, I don't mind him at 544 either. So he's only a little bit of an upgrade. And yeah, they're probably the two others I'd be really looking at.
Look, Tom Mitchell, Dusty Martin, and some of the other guys we've spoken about, I think, like five if you don't have him. I think Neal, as Hawker suggests, is not a terrible pick. But yeah, I think it'd be, for me, the players that I don't have would be Mitchell or Martin or one of the cheaper guys.
Zaki Merritt is currently sitting fifth in terms of average at the moment.
And we play North this week, and teams have just been, midfielders have been going nuts against North this year, so it might be a good week to bring him in. I do already have him.
Yeah, I think six of your next seven on the run home, Mark, are against teams who aren't currently sitting in the top eight.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah. Okay, so this is a little bit unexpected, but now we just wrapped up recording the show and had a look at afl.com.au, and the reports are now that Scott Pendlebury could return as soon as next week. Depending on his level of comfort, he might have to wear a glove when he first comes back and that sort of thing, but there's some talk that Scott Pendlebury might come back next week. If that is the case, wow. Does that change sort of anything that we discussed tonight?
Wow, that probably does. Look, it means that if you have four trades left, then you probably want to keep him. The incentive to keep him is probably a lot stronger now. I guess the problem is, though, that his form has been down all year. He really hasn't been hitting premium numbers. And you would think with a guard that he's not going to come back playing better than he was. He may miss two. He may miss three. I think this is probably as much information as we're going to get. So there's still some incentive to trade if you have enough. My advice to you, having six or seven, whatever you've got, would be probably still trading.
Hawker, does that change things for you?
Well, when there's someone as obvious as Selwood right now, I think I'd still probably go to Selwood, knowing what we know. Like, there's so many times where they say 1 week and then it still drags out to two or three anyway, or, you know, they're laid out, etc. If we know it's definitely one and you've got maybe three or four trades maybe hold, but any other situation, I think everything we said tonight is probably still relevant.
We'll leave it at that in terms of an extra update. We just thought it'd be good to record an extra few minutes after we logged off and saw that news.
Yeah.
All right, we'll move on to the next question here. This one's from James Cropf. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but WTF Rockcliffe, 57 on the weekend, hasn't hit the ton in a little while, really hasn't looked like he's recovered properly since coming back from that shoulder injury. Mark, are you going to move him on or?
Maybe if I had like 9 trades, I might try and upgrade him to someone worthwhile, but at 430, it's very, very hard to just trade him out. Like, you need to be using 2 trades to get to someone worthwhile. So depressing, his scores since coming back from injury, after he was so great before he got injured. So, look, I guess I'm just going to hope he comes good, maybe try some loophole action.
He was averaging like 120 plus prior to his injury, and then now he hasn't hit the ton since, so extremely frustrating. Hawker, do you have Rockliffe at all?
No, I don't, mate. But if I had him, I'd definitely keep him. I don't think there's any value of trading him out unless you've got, as Mark said, I think, you know, if you got 7 trades plus, maybe, you know what happens. As soon as you're trading him out, he'll go on a run for 130 from here.
So Sloan's the other guy that we got similar questions about. He's priced at 460. He hasn't hit the ton in the last 7 weeks as well. We know his upside similar to Rockliffe, so I'm guessing it's the same story.
I don't know. I mean, he looked a lot better in the last ball game that he played. I guess the difference is that Sloan, you would expect him not to play this week. It seemed so much like when Selwood got knocked out. It was so similar I kind of wouldn't expect him to get up this week. So that may make it a little bit different. If you've got lots of trades and you've got cash, maybe. If I had him, I'd probably just stick it out, I guess.
All right, we'll move on to a captain's corner to wrap up the show. This question here is from Brian to kick us off. If Danger doesn't play this week, thoughts on a VC and captain combo? It's an interesting question and might legitimately pan out if Danger doesn't quite get up from his injury, not injury, whatever that was.
I guess you have to, given his recent form, you have to still pick him as a vice captain even though he's injured. Like, it seems really, really likely that if he plays, he probably scores in the 1 to 110 bracket, but then against his old team at Adelaide Oval, he might fire up, so I guess you've got to pick him. My backup would be Zach Merritt against North. I think North have been leaking a lot of points, and Zach has a huge upside, so that one seems Monty to me.
Hawker, who are you thinking about going with this week?
If Danger plays, it's the same boat as Mark. Like, you know, you don't expect a lot out of him, but there's only minimal guys this year that you can really put as a vice-captain and then, you know, lock away, you know, over that 130-plus score anyway. So, look, if I was looking at anyone else, I'd go Tom Mitchell versus Freo. Freo giving up a heap of points inside mid. So, you know, I think Tommy's probably the guy there.
If I was going with Danger's VC, as long as he plays, it'll be Danger into either Mitchell against Freo or Doherty against Brisbane Lions as the backup captaincy option. If I was not going with Dangerfield, I'm faced with a loophole player who plays the night game on Saturday, so the Sydney game, in Darcy Cameron. I think if you've got Stranadica, you'd be in a similar boat with Freo playing Saturday night as well. So my vice captaincy in that particular scenario would be Bontempelli against Gold Coast. I think McRae or Dalhouse against Gold Coast mightn't be too awful either. And then going into Doherty again as captain, as a backup against the Brisbane Lions.
I also wonder whether, given the last 2 weeks what we've seen, that Fife now becomes a realistic captain option against the Hawks at home. That seems like, if he is back to form and he's back to being fit, that does seem like a game he'd score quite well in.
Yeah. I think if possible, though, you'd like to take him as a VC, just because, like you said, Mark, still a bit of question mark around that. But I definitely like what you're getting at there, Mark. I certainly hope it's a pointer toward an upward trend in his scoring.
Revival.
That's it for this week's show. Again, a thank you to our Patreon listeners. Our Patreons are the guys who, you know, support us and keep us going sort of monetarily and help make this a sustainable project. So thank you very much. Hawker, thanks very much for coming on to the show, mate.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Anything to leave our listeners with, mate, before you sign off?
No, just good luck this week, guys.
And with that, we'll catch you all next week. Good luck for the upcoming round. See ya. Don't want to make it crazy. Don't want to make it crazy. Don't want to make it crazy.